Welcome to Money Sense. I am Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he is the founder of the Stark Investments and one of the partners. And I've also asked Nick Kilbarden to join us. He's a wealth advisor with the Ellenbecker Investment Group, and he does development leadership as well. And so I wanted to do a show today with the three of us because we're talking about the market. And Mike, you have been on the show with me for almost over 25 years for sure. So you have rode that roller coaster with me. And the good news is, obviously, we're here. We never jumped off in the middle. We took it to the end. And I really just wanted to look at where we are today. I mean, you have come on the show quarterly now just to give us kind of an update. And I know last time we were on, you had this positive outlook for where the markets were going, because they always are going. And I'm just curious as to how you interpret this past quarter and where we are today.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Karen and Nick, for inviting me on the show. It's always a privilege to be asked to talk about the markets. I'd say if you had to sum up in one word the second quarter, and it still has a few more days to go, but I would say resiliency. It's been incredibly resilient. And you really look at where we were at the end of Q1. We were not in a great place. If I was optimistic, it was because I had a very cloudy crystal ball, because the market, as we said coming into the year, had a lot of tailwinds. I mean, the market was looking like it was going to have a good run. You had positive fiscal policy, mm-hmm. positive monetary policy. People saw inflation trending down. Hey, the Fed's going to start cutting rates. Strong fundamentals. They were predicting double-digit earnings. They were predicting record profit margins. So it was all good coming in. And indeed, the market came out of the blocks in the beginning of the year very strong. In fact, we hit a all-time high in the S&P early on in Q1, 7,100. And then February 28th, you woke up. I think it was Saturday morning, and you went, what looks like we're bombing Iran. And of course, the market was not anticipating that and reacted, as you might expect, in a somewhat negative fashion, because the market hates uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And now you had a ton of uncertainty, and it was uncertainty in a very sensitive place, because oil, energy, is the lifeblood of the global economy. Everybody knows that. This particular location, the Strait of Hormuz, is an epicenter of oil production. So everyone said, uh-oh, we're going to have an energy inflation shock. And indeed, we did have an energy inflation shock, as oil prices were, you know, in the maybe around $57 a barrel, and ultimately zoomed up to 113, triple digits. So mm-hmm. But and the market knew this was coming. And so as a result, market came off pretty sharply beginning March 1st. So we went from this very strong beginning to ultimately being down about 4.6% mm-hmm. in the first quarter. So you entered the second quarter, and people might have expected this is just going to get worse, because the war is not getting any better. It's just a lot of more bombs being dropped, and drones being launched, and more energy infrastructure being destroyed. But actually, the market rebounded very strongly. This is where the resiliency comes in. So whether you're talking about the market, mm-hmm. whether you're talking about the U.S. economy, whether you're talking about consumers, whether you're talking about labor, whether you're talking about, unfortunately, interest rates, yes. They all were resilient into this. If you were to dig into that, what you would find is that just looking at the market. So let's start with just talking about the market. Mm-hmm. In the second quarter, the market is up about 13.5%, plus minus. And that's a huge quarterly performance. So you go from being down 4.6% for the year to being up 9.6% for the year. And the drivers of that were familiar, because, again, you had somewhat concentrated leadership. Amazon, Broadcom, Microsoft, Meta, Nvidia, were sort of leading the charge. But at the same time, there was remarkable breadth in the market too. It wasn't just this very narrow slice. 43% of the constituent companies in the S&P outperformed the average. And they haven't done that for 3 years. Wow, that's very remarkable performance. So what was driving that remarkable performance? A number of things. On the one hand, let's get the little stuff out of the way. The AI story had been morphing into less of a, hey, AI is going to boost productivity, great, to, wow, they're building a lot of stuff. Data centers, energy infrastructure to power the data centers. So now you have a CapEx story being fueling the U.S. economy and boosting the stock market. To some degree, people were starting to see tariffs rolling over. They were much, much less of a factor. Mm-hmm. But of course, the big mover was what was going on with the Iranian situation. And the Iranian situation wasn't necessarily getting better. Mm-hmm. But the market has a tremendous tendency to analyze these situations and decide, is this a long-term impairment or is this sort of a storm that's going to blow over? And increasingly, the market got, I'm going to just say this word, comfortable with the Iranian situation. And they sort of analyzed it and said, you know, both sides ultimately have a lot of reasons to want to find an off-ramp. That was the sort of term of the day, yes. The off-ramp. Mm-hmm. The market didn't know when the off-ramp was going to be obtained or what it would look like. But they said essentially, look, the Iranians, particularly when President Trump sort of flipped the table on the Iranians and said, oh, you're going to blockade the strait? We're going to blockade the strait. So your oil is not going to get out. And now the Iranians had a real problem. Because they only had so much storage. And once you close down an oil well, it's not just, oh, let's turn the spigot off and then we can turn it back on again when it suits us. Once you shut down an oil well, it results in a permanent degradation of that resource.
I had no idea
that. Yeah. And so there was a lot of speculation. Do they have 30 days, 60 days? But it was clear that the administration had decided we're going to wait them out because time is on our side. They can only wait so long before they have to start shutting down these wells. And that's going to cripple them for, you know, a long, long time.
Long time.
On the other side, the Iranians were saying, well, oil prices are now triple digits. Gasoline prices in the United States are $4 heading to $5. Mm-hmm. Oh, there are these midterm election things coming up. And we know that President Trump would like to not have $5 oil, gasoline prices going into November. So we're going to wait him out. So you had this sort of stalemate game of chicken going on. And the market knew this. Mm-hmm. And the market said, okay, there's too many reasons for both sides to want to find an off-ramp. And of course, there's, you know, the Iranians want to save face and you have all that kind of stuff going on, all this sort of mano a mano stuff. But ultimately, this is what the market does. It said, We're on. We got this. Okay. It's not so great right now, but it's not going to last terribly long. So as a result, they sort of shrugged off what was going on and rallied hard because then they shifted their focus again back to all those tailwinds. Wow. Earnings are terrific. Profit margins are terrific. This CapEx story is unbelievable. On and on and on. So the market rallied hard. Now, it wasn't a linear rally. And I guess I would point out, for instance, on June 2nd, the market hit a new all-time high in the S&P 500, 7,600 and change. And the next day, boom, down. And it went down 4.5% from June 2nd to June 10th. Okay? And so what was driving that? Well, a number of things. On the one hand, anytime you hit an all-time high, and people, you know, start thinking, wow, valuations are pretty full right now.
Maybe I should take some profits, right?
Exactly. Nick's got it. So that's what the market does. They said, maybe I should take some money off the table here since we're at an all-time high. In addition, on the second, a very strong jobs number came out. And the market's going, the U.S. job engine is just humming along. That makes it less likely the Fed is going to lower rates.
Yes.
Because at least that aspect of the Fed's analysis is off the table. That's negative because they're already worried about inflation. And now the Fed has another reason not to lower rates. And in addition, you still had a lot of volatility. You know, every day, it's hard to even remember from day to day what was going on in the Iranian situation, but it was still pretty fluid and pretty volatile.
So I want to ask you something. You touched on something that's I think is very fascinating. We had one very, very good quarter in Q2, but what would you attribute to this growth? And you touched on a few things here, right? The fundamentals came in very strong. The earnings were stellar. But at the same time, you had the president making tweets or true social posts, as they're called now, right? But saying, you know, we have a memorandum of understanding, we have a peace deal. No, we're going to bomb them. Their country is not going to exist. And the market kept reacting to every single tweet. So how much of it do you feel like is the market thinking that, yes, we are going to be forward looking, this conflict is going to get blown past and everything's going to get resolved? Or how much of it is driven by the fundamentals between the two? What would you describe that as?
Sure. That's a great question, Nick.
You know what? Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about that question.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group. If you're looking for a trusted partner or ready to elevate your financial plan, you're in the right place. With multiple Better Business Bureau Torch Awards for ethics and integrity, Ellenbecker combines expertise with a team member you can trust. Meet our advisors and explore financial resources at ellenbecker.com.
Welcome to Money Sense. I am Karen Ellenbecker. I have two guests today. I have Mike Roth, who has been a guest on the show and has rode that roller coaster that they're kind of talking about right now. And then Nick Kabardin, who is a wealth advisor here at the Ellenbecker Investment Group. So I've asked him to join us today. And you posed a great question, Nick. In addition to that, how much of that is driven by AI?
Nick raised a great point because you have signal and noise, so to speak. So the signal is all this strong fundamentals. And the market, of course, that's what it's geared to be dialed into. Mm-hmm. Earnings and profit margins and CapEx, et cetera. At the same time, there's a lot of noise. And the administration, whether they do it intentionally or unintentionally, have a great good cop, bad cop sort of thing going, right? And our president relishes being the bad cop. So every time the Iranians weren't behaving the way he thought they were should be behaving under the circumstances, he'd blast them on social media, just come out, just blast them. At the same time, you know, you had also discussions, oh, you know, the good cops would be saying, well, you know, we're making some progress. We think that we're maybe getting closer to some sort of an agreement. And the market, of course, has seen this good cop, bad cop routine. So I would say that any given day, of course, the market might react to a particularly strong tweet or something like that. But in general, and notwithstanding that sort of 4.5% dip, which was driven by a number of factors, yeah, you could have some volatility day to day, but the trend was definitely up. It was very, very strong. So the market kept saying, okay, I'm going to concentrate on the signal, which is all the strong fundamentals. And I'm going to, I'm aware of the noise, but I'm sort of going to disregard that. So as a result, by the time you got to where we are now, you ended up with this great performance, essentially, in the market. And if you move from that market performance, obviously behind it was a very strong economy. The economy ended up, right now is on track for about a 3% GDP growth number, which is strong. It's a strong number.
It is. Mm-hmm.
I think the forward forecast is that that's going to slow down a little bit. In fact, I think the hope is it'll slow down a little bit because if it speeds up, the Fed is going to have to probably put the brakes on a little bit. So right now, the forecast is that it'll slow down to more in the 2.2-2.3% range. But the underlying fundamentals of the economy, when you look at households, you look at corporations, they were working with financial surpluses. This is not a robust economy driven by a credit bubble. They were in surplus. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of discussion around the K-shaped economy. So you had high net worth consumers more contributing to the economy than lower income, who are more impacted by gasoline prices, which were skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. But in general, it was a very healthy situation. And you look at sort of what was driving the demand. Again, you have a full employment situation. You have no credit bubbles forming. You look at the economic data, whether it was the hard data like manufacturing or whether it's soft data, the surveys where they go around and ask production managers, you know, how are things looking? Mm-hmm. They were both surprising to the upside. Mm-hmm. So every number that came out was like confirming, wow, the economy is really humming along, despite the fact that oil has gone through the roof. And then finally, of course, we'll talk a little bit more about consumers, but consumer spending was strong. Mm-hmm. Earnings continue to be strong. Yes. And you were getting more sort of support along the way. So the tax cuts were producing tax rebates to people. The tariffs were starting to roll over. And overall, it was just a very positive picture for the economy. Focusing on consumers specifically, you look at the May retail sales number, it was 0.9%. Mm-hmm. And year over year, it was something like, 6.9%. And that's the best we've had since July 2023. The consumers essentially were out spending. Now, again, there was a divergence. Lower income people were struggling more because, mm-hmm. again, gas prices are a much more important part of their mm-hmm. budgets. But in general, the retail spending picture looked pretty good. So I think right now we're on track for something like maybe 2.5% quarter for retail. Mm-hmm. Very, very and particularly when you think, wow, you know, given all the inflationary shocks we were absorbing, that's a remarkable number in that context. I think the overall picture was healthy, not just because of people's willingness to spend. Because when you look at wage growth was decent, about 1.5%, depending upon which index you're looking at. So if you have a 2.5% spending with 1.5% wage growth, well, people are spending more than they're earning. And what was behind that, most economists think, was the fact that the tax refunds mm-hmm. were so
larger than anticipated,
exactly.
Larger than the prior years.
Yeah, thanks mm-hmm. to the BBB, the big, beautiful bill that lowered taxes, at least for some period of time, mm-hmm. sustained consumers, allowed them to hang in there despite the inflation. Okay, so you have very positive background for the economy, but mm-hmm. particularly since we have a consumer-driven economy. Mm-hmm. And that segues into inflation.
You know, Mike, I just want to ask a question. Hmm? When we talk to clients, very often they really determine how the market is by gas prices and interest rates.
Right.
What people are buying houses for, you know, that sort of thing. How can the average consumer, our average investor, interpret what's going on? Because a little bit earlier you talked about, wow, it's a great time to be selling. It's a great time to be taking profits.
Well, it was that was the sentiment when it hit all-time highs.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, right now they're like in limbo. What do we do? I mean, sure. That's the question. Like, what do we do? The market seems to be doing better. Gas is so high though. What should we do? How does a regular consumer look at the market through their lens?
Sure. Well, obviously where we are now with the Iranian situation mm-hmm. is we have the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, yeah. which is not a deal. It's an agreement to talk about a deal. Yeah.
To look to get to a deal.
Yeah, to maybe get to a deal. We'll go to Switzerland, you know, take in the sights and maybe talk about a deal. It's a very sort of, I'll use the word fluid, but mm-hmm. fragile situation. On the one hand, the immediate effect is that they've agreed to stop bombing each other, always a positive. They've agreed to the opening of the Straits of Hormuz, although that's sort of a daily saga, but in general, mm-hmm. Shipping is starting to go through mm-hmm. and it doesn't immediately revert to where it was before the war. It takes a while for shipping to get ramped up and shipping rates to normalize and blah, 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 blah. But definitely ships are moving through and the markets are already ahead of that. They're going, okay, oil prices fell precipitously from, you know, the triple digits, 110, 113 range, and now they're around 75. Mm-hmm. Headed toward 55 is what the forecasts are. Gasoline prices were starting to bump up against $5. They've come off, although again, there's a delayed effect to that. Mm-hmm. So it's not like immediately, oh my God, we're back to $3 gasoline, but mm-hmm. it's heading there. And the forecast is, yeah, we're going to be back down to, you know, $3.30 a gallon before you know it. That's sort of the prediction. And they agreed to sort of kick the can down the road on a lot of other issues. Now, those other issues are where the devil lies. The situation, as you can read the headlines every day, there are still a lot of regional tensions. You have Hezbollah and Israel, you know, in Lebanon, mm-hmm. you know, bombing each other every other day and blaming the other side. And every time that happens, it looks like everything is going to go off the rails until, oh, wait, we're back on now. With Trump calls the Israelis and say, knock it off, blah, all that. It's just sort of an entertaining sideshow, although, you know, horrific for the people in Lebanon. Right. There's still huge thorny issues around the whole nuclear situation. That was a red line for us. The whole reason for going in there is that there's no way you guys are getting a nuke. The Iranians are also saying that, well, there's no way we're not going to give up our nuclear ambition. So there's a middle road there of verification and agreement mm-hmm. as to what they're going to be using their nuclear material for. Now, they have a lot of enriched uranium, mm-hmm. and we don't know where all of it is. So that's the big challenge. You know, can we come up with a solution? And they've just recently agreed to allow the inspectors in from the Atomic Energy Commission. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's still called. Can we come up with a verification system that satisfies us and then the Iranians can live with? That's mm-hmm. a big question. You also have a situation in Iran. They have a very fractured leadership. it's not clear sort of who's driving the ship on any given day. On the one hand, you have the generals of mm-hmm. the guard, mm-hmm. who are very bellicose and very militaristic, this is what they do, and very ideological. To them, you know, the economy may go down the drain, but, you know, we're fighting for our ideology. And then you have politicians who say, hey, we can't let the economy go down the drain. We can't shut in all the wells. So there's been this constant tension between politicians will say, yeah, you know, we think this is going to be a positive situation. And they have the Iranians saying, we're closing down this, the general mm-hmm. saying, we're going to close down the strait. So you still have that tension as to who is going to be ultimately making decisions in the on the Iranian side. Even as we speak today, the market has sort of concluded that, yeah, this thing is going to get done and they're going to find some way to solve all these issues. But there is this other reality, which is that because of how, quote unquote, fluid it is, the thing could all fall apart.
Unpredictable.
Bombs mm-hmm. could start flying again, depending upon a lot of different variables. Yeah. But at least for the moment, the situation is in a big circular curve back to your question. Gas prices are down and probably going to go down. That's number one. Number two is bad news for your investors. This is probably one of the worst times ever to try to figure out what's going on with rates mm-hmm. and inflation. Because, yes, we had an energy inflation shock. Mm-hmm. So everyone, even the Fed, anticipates, okay, we're going to see some pullback now on inflation. How quickly that happens and to what degree it happens is a mystery to everybody. Yes, it's going to be great that we're going to go back to $55 a barrel oil and $3.30 a gallon gasoline, but there are still other things going on mm-hmm. in the economy, and you might have sticky inflation. So the good news that has been inflation, our last sort of number was around 3.3%. That was the so-called consumer purchase expenditure index. That was in April, and we'll get a new reading in a couple of days, but 3.3%. And then you had the CPI, consumer price index, that came out in May, and that was 2.9%. Now, both of those numbers are, I would call, elevated. Not what the market wanted to see. In fact, in coming into the year, everyone thought that the inflation number would continue to head toward mm-hmm. 2. That was the trend.
That was the target for the Fed for
exactly,
years.
Exactly. And we're going to get there, and the Fed's going to cut, mm-hmm. and everybody's going to be happy. And instead, obviously, the Iranian situation threw it all into the other direction. What has been remarkable is that yes, it's elevated. But when you look at momentum of mm-hmm. the inflation number, and when you look at the breadth of the inflation numbers, like is everything going up in price? No, gasoline definitely. Mm-hmm. A few things tied more directly to oil. And as I said, momentum, I mean, it ticked up from 3.2 in March to 3.3 in April on the Consumer Price Expenditure Index. CPI went from 2.8 to 2.9. Mm-hmm. So not good for the market because this is not going in the right direction. And the Fed is not going to cut rates if it's not going in the right direction. So you have that as your background. Yeah. And then you have a brand new Fed chairman.
I was going to say that's a big change we've seen this year.
Big change.
A change of an era, really, going from Jerome Powell to Kevin Warsh.
Well, and as Nick just pointed out, you also have a big, potentially a big ideological shift. Because everyone's saying, well, this is Trump's guy. We all know that Trump wants the Fed to, you know, take interest rates down.
He's mentioned it once or twice.
Yeah, once or twice.
He's threatened in his own way. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the economy and the rates and inflation. I think that that is one of the things that affects our clients' portfolios the most. Mm-hmm. And especially when they're trying to deal with things like healthcare and budgeting. Of course, we don't like to use the word budgeting anymore. In our business, we use cash reserves and cash flow and anything to get around away from budgeting. But the truth of it is that this is a time in the world that everything is so unpredictable. And there are all the things that you've been talking about that affect our clients' portfolios. But what they look at often is the headlines and some of the things that they don't really understand, like AI, what's really happening, who's saying what can we trust, what can we do? And as they look at their portfolios, you know, they look to us and they say, mm-hmm. what do you recommend? What do you suggest? And of course, one of the things, Mike, that you and I have talked about and Nick is that we encourage our clients to know what's in their portfolios, to really be able to have that ballast of like, what is going to happen when the market goes down? What's going to happen when the market goes up?
Absolutely.
So that they have that comfort level of understanding what they own and what we anticipate. We can't know for sure, but we have determined over our years, our expertise over the 30 years is that owning quality is one of those anchors that really does help stabilize the portfolio. Owning bonds, parking away, as I say, the income that you're going to need and watching the inflation, mm-hmm. watching gas prices, watching all of the different things. But one of the things that we talk about is healthcare is one of the things that we can't predict. And that's where inflation is really kicks in and can damage a portfolio. So with that cheery little note at the end here, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I just want to share, and Mike, we've been friends and we've worked together for so many years. It's one of the advantages that I think the Ellenbecker Investment Group has is that we get to look at the people right in the eyes, the one who offer us advice and offer us guidance on how we manage portfolios. But also, all of our managers are really right here in mm-hmm. Milwaukee, and they know our business, they know our expectations, they know how much we care about our clients. And I remember when I was a traditional stockbroker, we never got to talk to the people who gave us advice. There were representatives who brought us donuts and brought us breakfast and they would sell their products. You know, they would do that. And so that was some information, but not the type of information that we get when we're sitting across from you today and we talk to advisors and we have this ability to have a connection well beyond just investing. A connection that says, I want to invest in you and you want to invest in me to be successful, do the best we can for our clients. So I really do appreciate, Mike, you taking the time quarterly to come all the way across town in this crazy traffic that we're experiencing that normally might take you 40 minutes, takes you an hour and 40 minutes sometimes. So I do appreciate it. And I appreciate the wisdom that you share with us and the wisdom that you've gathered through going through these crazy markets and these different situations. And I know there's a little bit for us to wrap up on inflation, which is something that we all worry about. And when we talk to our clients, we say, we want to protect you against taxes, you know, the market, build in some inflation protection. And it's just been, again, a roller coaster.
Well, as we were just saying, it's a very difficult time to evaluate what's going on with inflation. Obviously, with oil prices plunging, currently down to about $75 a barrel, that's a big positive. You have that function. You know, is it going to continue to go down? Are they going to get this memorandum of understanding into a solid deal, et cetera, et cetera? The other variable is essentially the change over at the Fed. You've had this, and Nick pointed this out, you have this big change after many years, not just another talking head, but rather a significant, at least potentially significant, ideological change. And by that I mean, this is President Trump's guy, Warsh. The market was wondering, well, what are we going to get with Warsh? Are we going to get somebody who's going to essentially just follow the Trump line and is going to ease and spark a lot of concerns? Okay, the Fed is asleep at the switch when it comes to fighting inflation, or what? What are we going to get? And so we just had the first Fed meeting, and Warsh came out and said, we're not even concerned about the labor situation. It's so solid. We're focused completely on price stability. And we're not going to do anything right now, but we're watching it. That was, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's essentially what he said. And it was a little more hawkish than expected, but that's only because of this backdrop of Warsh is sort of Trump's guy. And for Warsh to come out and, you know, sound like Paul Volcker resurrection coming back and saying, yeah, no, we're going to fight inflation if it doesn't go down. The markets were both surprised, but also pleased, I think, to hear that. But the Fed essentially is like the rest of us. I think they're looking through the inflation shock we just went through. Obviously, we're now in a situation where the hope is everything's going to come together and we're going to continue to see this decrease of inflation. But Warsh said, you know, if it doesn't happen, if it stays up here or, heaven forbid, starts ticking up again, we might do something. So the market interpreted that, if you just read all the analyses afterwards, the consensus was, okay, cuts are off the table. Forget about them. And hopefully we don't get more than one or two increases before the year is over. I personally think that inflation is likely to trend down because so much of it was concentrated in the energy sector, and that is obviously receding. I think the forecast coming into sort of before the MOU was that we're going to see inflation trending around 3.3%, which is where it is right now. That's where inflation is. So it's forecasted not to get worse. And obviously, with prices falling in oil, it's likely to be better. Falling oil prices are supportive for the economy, it's supportive for the consumer. It takes the pressure off everybody. Everybody has more wiggle room, including the Fed. So I think what you're going to see is the Fed essentially being sort of data dependent, which it always is, actually, but you know, very much dependent upon, right? Every inflation print is going to get scrutinized. So we got, you know, we got one coming up. We're going to have one coming up every month. And every month, people are going to say, is it holding? Is it trending up? Is it trending down? And that's going to inform both your investors who are sort of focused on inflation, but also investors in the markets generally. So the markets right now, I think, are going to be generally range bound. We are near all-time high still. So depending upon how you want to view it, I think the forward price earnings ratio is 22, which essentially says for every dollar of earnings, I'm paying $22 for it. Well, it's either fully valued or at best fairly valued. So there's that. Now, there's you can, you know, obviously bull case would be, oh, look at earnings, I'll look at price. It justifies it going up higher. But, you know, you have to acknowledge where you are. And so to the extent that inflation could still be a problem and the Fed might raise rates, that's going to essentially put a sort of ceiling on where the market's going to go. The other factor, obviously, is the Iranian situation. So right now, the market has sort of talked itself into the idea that this thing's going to get done, and it's going to get done in a way that's going to be very positive for inflation and the economy. And if that, for one reason or another, doesn't happen, goes off the mm-hmm. rails and bombs start falling, I mean, obviously, that's going to have a very negative mm-hmm. impact on the market, even if strong fundamentals are there.
But we've got this elections coming up. We always see this desire to not have any bombs dropping and to not have any
right.
Well, certainly
happen.
If you're the party in power.
I mean, yeah. You know, that's generally the situation. But what do you think? I know, Nick, you had a question on that.
Yeah,
earlier. Looking
at historical perspective, right, we always say that history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. Mm-hmm. So when you look at midterm election years, we generally have a pretty big spike once we get the resolution of who is going to be in the office. And because market, again, hates uncertainty, but once uncertainty is off the table, it's kind of a nice rally that we've seen historically. Do you think we'll see something like that happening this year?
I do, but again, it's dependent upon the two variables we just discussed. What's going on with the Iranian situation? If by November the thing is done and dusted, yeah, I think we're going to see mm-hmm. the historical trend take hold. And if and as a corollary of that, if inflation is now still trending down, or at least not trending up, and oil prices are going down and gasoline prices are, mm-hmm. are headed toward $3 a gallon, yeah, I think everyone's going to say it's sort of the normal situation, and the normal factors will be in play,
okay.
including the sort of post midterm boost you discussed. Nothing's on autopilot.
There's always uncertainty.
Always uncertainty.
You cannot get away from that.
And so, and at the same time, you don't want to obsess over daily volatility, because
right.
headlines mm-hmm. can drive anything anywhere. But you sort of have to sort of be aware of what's going on, and it's real easy to be aware of what's going on with the Iranian situation and with oil prices and gas prices. And so you have to be sensitive to that. But I think Nick is exactly correct. Right now, if you were just sort of placing odds, you say odds are we're going to have a deal in Iran. We're going to continue to see gasoline prices going down. And it'll be game on for the usual dynamic of U.S. politics and the market.
Mm-hmm. I guess I want to add just a couple minutes to our show today, because one of the things that people are constantly asking me about is they're hearing that AI is driving all of the decisions and all of the research, and how much of that is actually true?
Everything I've said today is AI driven. No, it's not true. I'll just give you my personal opinion,
yeah.
because everybody and their uncle has an opinion on AI
right.
and whether it's the worst thing ever. Or the greatest thing ever. And my personal opinion is that it's a huge positive.
Yeah.
In general. Obviously, you know, it's just like when they introduced the automobile. If you were a buggy whip maker, man, you were in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, there are certainly some people whose lives will be displaced, their careers displaced by various aspects of AI. But for the overall economy, the market, you know, it gets this stuff right more often than not.
Yeah.
It has been a huge boost to productivity, mm-hmm. and it's really early innings. And now you have this CapEx impulse, which won't last forever, but it's going to be very strong. AI is a tool,
yes.
and it's an incredible tool. And if you're you know, a Luddite and sitting there saying, like, there's no way in the world I'm ever going to use AI, man, you're missing it.
You're already behind.
Yeah,
right.
And the people who are embracing it are going to bypass you.
Well, I think of the fact that when microwaves came along, you know, and I'm not going to use a microwave and whatnot, but a microwave doesn't cook an entire dinner. It cooks what you put in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's not going to make your whole dinner for you. And
right.
I think that it's the information that goes in, and it's the way we use it that I think is really important. And it does give people an advantage in doing research. If you're not using it for research and being able to be more reactive,
mm-hmm.
You are missing the boat.
Yeah, no.
There's
just
no doubt about it.
I mean, obviously, you know, there have to be some guardrails, and there have
yes.
to be, you know, how is it being used? Because that great power can be used for, you know, nefarious things.
Yeah.
No question about it. But to not recognize the huge advantages of AI,
mm-hmm.
and to take advantage of them would be a huge mistake.
Yeah, very true.
I think that AI can also give us some of the information that we need so that we can be more astute, we can be looking at more sustainability. But it isn't human. And it doesn't have that relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's the relationship that I think is so important. The numbers are great, but it's the relationship that you mm-hmm. put that all together that really makes the difference.
The human difference.
Yeah. It really is. My guest today is one of my favorite people. And I know I say that to you. You used to blush when I'd say that. And I would just, you know.
I wasn't on camera before.
<I know. laughs> Mike Roth, and he's a senior partner and founder of Stark Investments right here in Milwaukee, which is wonderful. And he has been a friend and a guiding factor in many of the decisions that I've actually made in my business. And again, I want to introduce and thank Nick for being here. He is also a wealth advisor with the Ellen Becker Investment Group. And we will see you next quarter, and we will see what is happening and all the good news, because, you know, part of it is looking for what's right, not always looking for what's wrong. And with that, I just want to thank you for joining us on Money Sense today. We hope that today's conversation is meaningful difference in your personal and your well-being. And at the Ellen Becker Investment Group, before we plan, before we advise, we always listen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.